It's a confidential legal memo from the IRS said that President Trump's tax returns would have to be turned over to Congress unless the president decided to invoke executive privilege. Executive privilege has been floated as a possibility on other occasions throughout President Trump's administration, notably around the release of the redacted Mueller report and subpoenas for current and former White House staff. While the president has the power to withhold information for the sake of the public good, it's rarely invoked by the executive branch. Our next guest is here to explain more about the process and how it's been used historically. Paul Nolet is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Paul, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, give us the nutshell of what executive privilege is.
So executive privilege is essentially the ability of the president to shield information from the other branches of government, including Congress, the courts, and more generally to the public, using arguments of either national security or to protect sensitive communications within the executive branch.
A key issue in a lot of the current debates between the president and Congress is who gets this privilege of executive privilege? Does it apply just to the president, to senior aides? How far does it extend out?
Yeah, and that's a big question. And I should say at the outset that one of the reasons why there are so many of these questions left open is that despite the fact that executive privilege has been part of American law going back to the George Washington administration, the phrase itself and the concept of executive privilege does not exist in the Constitution. So the Constitution doesn't give any easy answers here. Now, I think in response to the specific question that you asked, I think most, even though courts haven't directly addressed this issue, most legal observers would say that it would have to be the president who invokes executive privilege. In other words, if there was another member of the executive branch who was called to testify in front of Congress, they themselves couldn't say, well, I invoke executive privilege. It would have to be the president on their behalf.
Now, here's a weird twist on that, though. We've had members of the president's cabinet testifying before Congress saying they're going to decline to answer that question because even though the president hadn't invoked executive privilege on that issue, they didn't want to halt. They didn't want to stop his opportunity to do that. So kind of preemptively saying the president could invoke executive privilege on this issue, so I can't step on that here.
Yeah, it's a way of sort of having it both ways, where you don't try to claim that as an executive branch member who's not the president, you're not claiming that you have executive privilege, but at the same time, you're declining to answer what Congress is looking for. Even though the president hasn't declared it or invoked executive privilege. So it's a somewhat of a rhetorical strategy, I think, to avoid giving Congress what they want without raising some serious legal issues at the same time.
Some of the sticky issues lately are, again, over the issue of who it applies to. And when you have, say, Congress saying that Don McGahn, a former legal counsel to the president, shouldn't be protected under executive privilege, and the White House potentially saying he should, or a communications director like Hope Hicks, or a deputy counsel, those are all possibilities. If Congress says yeah, the White House says no, then what?
Well, then it gets to the courts, and they're put in a pretty sticky situation. In fact, Anthony Kennedy, former justice in a case back in the 2000s in the W. Bush administration, mentioned how when exactly what you described just happens, when Congress says one thing and the president invokes executive privilege, you have two branches of government on a collision course with one another. And it can be really difficult for the courts to step in and adjudicate that. But they will be called upon to do that, particularly if Trump becomes even more aggressive beyond even the Mueller report, like with the tax returns. If he's more aggressive invoking executive privilege, the courts will get involved and they'll have to address these issues.
Yeah. How much has President Trump specifically invoked executive privilege in response to Congress versus just saying that the subpoena isn't or doesn't merit a response or a lawsuit to block the release of financial documents? How often is he actually invoking executive privilege?
So the official, in terms of officially invoking executive privilege, it's only happened with the Mueller investigation and the redactions to this point. He's threatened to invoke it on numerous occasions, even in fact going back to 2007 when the Mueller investigation first began. He was saying, well, I'm going to invoke executive privilege to prevent people from testifying or at least communicating with the Mueller investigators. But in fact, he didn't do that. So this was the first time that he officially invoked the privilege, although he has said on multiple occasions as well, I'm just going to ignore this subpoena. So that also raises some issues that even if you don't officially invoke executive privilege, if essentially your actions are doing that, does that raise the same legal issues as if the president was invoking executive privilege? So it's another thorny legal issue that has no easy answers.
Talking to Paul Nolet from Marquette University, looking at executive privilege, what it means for this president, past presidents, and what happens when Congress and the White House disagree over what it is and what it means. And Paul, the current players on this stage are Republican President Trump and Democrats in the House. It isn't always that way. Executive branches often are trying to shield themselves from congressional oversight in one way or another, right?
Absolutely. And this goes back to George Washington, in fact, who didn't use the phrase executive privilege, but tried to shield documents from the very first congressional investigation during the course of his presidency. So presidents of different political parties have invoked the privilege before. In fact, Bill Clinton did this during the Watergate investigation as well. Rather the Whitewater investigation, excuse me,
right,
as well as the Monica Lewinsky investigation. And President Obama invoked executive privilege in another scandal, the Fast and Furious scandal, which actually led the House of Representatives to hold Eric Holder, the attorney general, in contempt when he refused to turn over documents. So this is something that is not a partisan thing in the sense that there's one party president who is using these claims. It's very much a claim, an invocation that variety of presidents have used over the years.
Let's bring on a caller. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. One of the things that Congress, or at least the Democrats, need to realize is that Trump is challenging everything all the way up and through to the Supreme Court. And he realizes that the Democrats or the House of Representatives, they have no legal enforcement department. They don't have a sheriff's department. They don't have anybody that can lock up anyone. Even if they put a subpoena on and one of Trump's members denies their request for information or is in violation of the subpoena, so what if they tack on $500 a day for violation of the subpoena? Either the Trump will pay it or the RNC will pay it on their behalf. Trump is taking everything to the Supreme Court, and even if the Supreme Court rules against Trump, they have no enforcement agency.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. So, Paul, Congress toothless, Mike says, even potentially the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you think?
Well, I think that's right in some regards. I mean, there's a lot of things that have already been brought up, in fact, that executive branch members and the president can do to try to avoid dealing with Congress by refusing to answer questions and ignoring subpoenas and that sort of thing. Of course, if the House of Representatives does go to the courts, then they do win in court in the lower courts and then eventually in the Supreme Court level. It's going to put a lot of political pressure, if nothing else, on Trump to comply. And in fact, this is what happened with Richard Nixon in the Watergate investigation when the Supreme Court unanimously said, hey, Nixon, you can't invoke executive privilege here. You have to turn over the tapes. And he did so, and then he resigned shortly after. So I think the key here is not so much, you know, a $500 fine per day or something like that, which will just get paid by somebody else, but rather it's the political pressure that'll build if Trump tries to ignore the courts.
There's been concern over the years that the balance of power on many issues has shifted from Congress toward the executive branch, toward the president. When it comes to executive privilege and congressional oversight, do you think that's been the case? Have presidents over time been subject to less relevant oversight?
Well, actually, there's been more oversight from Congress over time. I agree with the broader point, absolutely, that power has flowed from Congress to the presidency when it comes to war powers, when it comes to many other things as well. But when it comes to investigations, the courts, particularly since U.S. v. Nixon, the Watergate case, have been clear that the president is not above the law and that the president cannot invoke an absolute executive privilege. Just kind of utter the magic words and all investigations go away. In fact, the courts have said, no, Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and they have a right to information, and so do the courts. So the courts balance that with the fact that the president has legitimate arguments for some executive privilege as well, but it's not anything goes. And in fact, if anything, you could argue over the last few decades since Watergate, the courts have been skeptical of the broadest claims that presidents have made about their immunity from the legal process.
Briefly, Paul, as we wrap up, what is the next bit of information you're watching for in about 30 seconds?
I think the big thing is to what extent Trump actually invokes executive privilege across a bunch of different areas. And then we're just going to have to wait and see as sometimes lengthy litigation crawls through the courts. And I think it's almost inevitable, I think, the way that things are going, that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to weigh in one way or another on one of these big, complicated issues.
Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Paul Nolet, associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. He joined us for a look at executive privilege, what it is, how it's been used in the past, and how it could be making news in the coming weeks as the potential fight over President Trump's tax returns and subpoenas of current and former Trump administration officials plays out in Washington, D.C. You can share your thoughts on executive privilege and the latest in the standoff between the president and Congress. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.